knife.
A podcast of the cinema.
Okay, so it was, there was no LaToya, there was no Latavia, and there was no Farrah. That's the full answer to your question.
Okay, before we talk about the Destiny's Child reunion at Coachella, maybe we should introduce ourselves in case this is somebody's first episode.
Okay, fine. You're Alonzo Duralde. You have a lot of jobs.
I do. And you're Dave White.
You are, hang on, I'm going to tell everybody the jobs. Look, I want them to be impressed with you.
That's not going
to
happen.
I'm very impressed with you all the time, and I need everyone to feel the way I feel. Well, I don't need everybody to feel the way I feel about you as my man, because stay back.
Back up, yeah.
Right. But, all right. You're the reviews editor. You're the reviews editor at The Wrap. Lead film critic there as well. You are a co-host of What the Flick on the Young Turks Network. You are a co-host of the podcast Who Shot Ya on the Maximum Fun Network. What else? Things.
Various odds and ends. And you are Dave White. You are the co-host of this program. And
well, they know that already.
I would guess so.
You don't need to pad my resume.
You write for The Wrap. You are a longtime film critic and author.
Yes, that's correct. Author.
Author.
That's also correct.
Nobody ever, that was a, have you ever been anywhere where anybody yelled author? Like encore, yes, but I've never heard anybody go, author, author.
No, I haven't.
And I've also never heard anybody yell, Arthur.
Does it count, though, if after I have read my work in public, people have applauded?
But nobody yelled, author.
No, because that's stupid.
Right.
Well, but people did applaud, and it really did happen, and I was there.
Yes.
I was the one they came to see.
That's right.
To buy my book and to have it signed and to speak to me personally after the fact.
I've witnessed this myself.
I ain't people.
Yes, Lena.
So, I just needed to clear up the facts for you.
Okay. No LaToya.
It was just Kelly and Michelle and the Queen.
So, Michelle, they could handle this. Kelly, they could handle this.
Yes.
Beyonce, they could handle this.
Yes.
Just checking.
But the other three,
I don't think they can handle this.
Long gone. Long gone. And no reunification at Coachella.
I see.
Because why would they? I don't know if there's bad blood. I don't know that Beyonce's the one that walked around saying, you're fired. Like, I think that was her father. But, you know, there used to be six. Well, there were never more than four at a time.
Right.
But that fourth was a revolving door. And then there were three.
That fourth slot was like wearing a red shirt on Star Trek.
Kinda.
You were not long for this world.
They would have called the song Bills, 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 Bills if they really wanted.
A quartet.
Yeah. Anyway. The fact that you didn't know Lose My Breath makes me understand that there's a lot you don't know.
No, well, when you played it for me.
About America's Sweethearts.
When you played it for me, I was like, okay, no, I have heard that song.
No, you think you did. You said, I think I've heard this before.
I'm pretty sure I've heard it before.
I don't even know who I married.
You know exactly who you married.
Quite frankly.
You know exactly who you married. You married somebody who kind of stopped paying attention to pop music somewhere around 1987. With occasional fits and starts of, oh, Hanson.
I'm not angry.
Oh, it's that Carly Rae Jepsen.
I'm just disappointed.
You knew. You've always known. So apparently there was some concern that Rampage might not beat A Quiet Place for number one this weekend.
I want to know how many people actually had that real concern and how many of them carried it through the weekend in spite of the fact that our garbage president is bombing Syria just because he's bored and upset.
I imagine people who work for Warner Brothers and or Dwayne The Rock Johnson were thinking about it a great deal.
Fine. We all have to be distracted by something.
Yes.
My distraction is related to the Destiny's Child reunion.
Yes.
The question was posed to me on the internet. Pick one. Beyonce or Rihanna?
Oh.
How can I make that sort of choice? I can't.
What am I, Sophie?
I mean, okay. I do follow a Twitter account that is devoted entirely to Rihanna's daily looks.
Mm-hmm.
It's very good.
And she is friends with Manolo Blahnik.
Yes.
As we know from that documentary.
About Manolo Blahnik.
The Boy Who Made Shoes for Lizards, I believe, is the title.
Yes. This is a problem that's vexing me. Who would I have to pick? Like a gun is held to my head. Who do I pick?
Why create these painful hypothetical situations when the real world is so very painful in a real way?
I know. For now, I don't know that I want to make a choice. I don't want to pick. I didn't pick yet, but it's been on my mind. Like if the Titanic were sinking, mm-hmm. and I was Kate Winslet, and I had room on that board for someone.
I was going to say.
Because she had room on the board.
She had room on that board. We all know it.
Who would I let drown? And who would I save?
I would save Cheryl Lee Ralph.
That is the noble gesture. But yeah, who do I like better? I talk about Rihanna more on a day-to-day basis.
It's true. Please do not cover
Rihanna comes into casual conversation in this house.
Please do not
much
cover
much more frequently than Beyonce.
Our Instagram feed with bees. We see you, Beehive.
Listen, I'm just going to still think about this. I have all the time in the world.
Yes, because it's stupid and pointless and matters not in the slightest. So take your time.
I might have to make a chart. Like Gene Seberg did in Bonjour Tristesse, the pros and cons.
Uh-huh. I think fewer people care.
That was my favorite scene in Bonjour Tristesse, by the way.
Fewer people care about your response to this than worried about whether or not Rampage was going to be number one for the week.
No one listening to this show right now, or who has ever listened to this show, cares more about Rampage's box office than about who is better, Beyonce or Rihanna.
You don't know that.
I know that for a fact.
You don't know that.
There's no one listening to this show that cares more about the box office of Rampage than about who's the best. Who's number one, Rihanna or Beyonce?
Think about it this way. We've gotten listeners from the schmoes, and we're thrilled to have them here. But I have a sneaking suspicion.
Okay, maybe the schmoes boys.
The people
and
who follow,
and all y'all are boys. You know
you
are.
People who follow the schmoes.
I've never met a schmo girl who followed us here.
You know they cared more about.
If you are out there, please, please, please tell us.
Schmo girls.
Schmo women.
Yes.
Schmo ladies.
Schmo femmes.
Schmo, yeah. If you're a schmo fan who's not a guy who came here to find us, identify yourself, please.
You are a guy. We're delighted that you're here.
But I'm guessing.
I suspect that they care more about the box office performance of Rampage than about whether you pick Rihanna or Beyonce. You know I'm right.
It's not about whether I pick Rihanna or Beyonce. It's about
whether they would.
Who does the universe favor?
I'd say the universe is giving both of them a pretty clear path right now. They're fine. They're going to be okay.
It's not my intention to set up a false, a false competition. But as the question was posed to me, like, what would I do? How would I choose? If I encompassed all of the universe.
And what about Cardi B?
She's fine.
Where does she fall in all this?
She's problematic.
Everyone is if you dig enough.
I know. Okay, we don't actually have a lot of time. We're wasting quite a bit of it. So we need to, because we have a
hard out, as it were.
We have a scholarship committee meeting we have to go to.
Yes,
and it's happening soon. So yes. This is actually going to be a shorter than normal probably episode.
Yeah,
because of this. So we have three films to talk about, because I have still not seen You Were Never Really Here.
Right. Which I keep wanting to call This Is Where I Leave You.
Well, I feel as pulled toward You Were Never Really Here before seeing it as I feel pulled toward This Is Where I Leave You after having seen it. That is to say, I don't really want to go see this movie, even though I like Lynn Ramsey.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having a desire block for this film because everything about it communicates a feeling of dread and misery.
It is.
And I'm just, you know.
I'll put it this way. It is a less unpleasant sit than We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Okay. Fine.
I can offer you that.
Fine. Someone on Twitter last night said, this is what we talk about when we talk about We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Nice.
And it made me laugh enough that I almost gave that person an automatic follow. But I'm going to wait around to see what else comes along.
Did Joyce Carol Oates retweet that?
No.
She tweets. She tweets a lot.
Joyce Carol Oates?
Yes.
Is she alive?
Yeah, I follow her on Twitter.
Who's the one that died? Rita Mae Brown died.
When?
Wait, no. Who's the one that wrote the alphabet books?
No, Sue Grafton.
Okay, Sue Grafton died.
God, Dave, give me a heart attack. Rita Mae Brown is a lesbian legend. Sue Grafton wrote a series of beloved cozy mysteries. Granted, Rita Mae Brown also wrote a series of beloved cozy
Rita
mysteries.
Rita Mae Brown write mysteries with her about cats? Her sneaky pie?
Sneaky Pie Brown. Yeah. Yes. But she also wrote Slumber Party Massacre.
I know she did. She also named her cat Sneaky Pie.
She did.
How can we trust her in reality?
And I,
in spite of the fact that she wrote Slumber Party Massacre.
And I want to say that she and Fanny Flagg were an item back in the day.
Oh, really?
I think so.
Does Fanny Flagg ever talk about who her lady loves are?
I think she is kind of keeping it DL.
She's not closeted, though. Is she?
I don't...
Fanny Flagg?
I think she's of that...
She's still alive,
she's
right?
Of that generation of no one asks and she doesn't tell.
Weird.
But, I mean, come on. If you read Fried Green Tomatoes at the Whistle Stop Cafe, it's like, okay.
Wait, I got the
Fannypedia?
The Fanny Flagg Wikipedia page.
Mm-hmm.
In the late 1970s, Flagg was in a relationship with American writer Rita Mae Brown.
Oh, okay. So this is known.
Whom she met at a party in the Hollywood Hills, hosted by Marlo Thomas.
Oh! Where is the time machine? I want to go to there.
You know Phil Donahue was at that party, too.
Of course.
Looking all handsome.
What did they drink? Riesling?
At the time?
Uh-huh.
They were all drinking Perrier.
Campari and soda?
They were drinking Perrier because that was the jam back then.
Martini and Rossi
in the 1970s. The couple briefly shared a house together in Charlottesville, Virginia before breaking up. According to Rita Mae Brown, who talks and talks and talks, Flagg also lived for 8 years with former The Bold and the Beautiful actress Susan Flannery.
Don't know her, but good for her.
Well, she's a handsome 78-year-old woman who was on The Bold and the Beautiful. She was also in The Towering Inferno and The Gumball Rally.
Ooh.
So you'll pay some respect.
No shade here.
Yeah. So you know what? Fanny Flagg is out.
Okay.
If she weren't,
it wouldn't be on her wiki
she'd
page.
Have that stuff scrubbed off her wiki page.
Then I take it back if I misunderstood the outness of Fanny Flagg.
I would rather sit here and talk about Fanny Flagg for the next hour than to go into the disappointment of Rampage.
Mm.
Because it is a disappointment. And I was a person who was... we were all rooting for you.
Yes.
Rampage. The trailer made you look extra awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And you were pretty awesome, but not awesome enough, and also had problems with things that chop your awesome points off significantly, and you didn't even think it was as awesome as I think it is.
Yeah, and I think maybe if I hadn't gone by myself, if I had, you know, if I'd been with friends and we were...
sat next to Bibbs,
well, see,
who was
that makes,
very excited.
That makes movies like this better.
And you know how sexy Bibbs is,
well,
too.
Sitting
next to him is a thrill all of its own.
I saw White House Down with Bibbs and Whitney and Gray. And
right. And Gray was on the other side of Bibbs.
We had the greatest time. So there's certain kinds of dumb movies that you really need to experience with friends. And I saw Alone, and so that maybe didn't help.
Matt was with me, and then Bibbs sat between me and Matt for some reason. I don't know why. Matt invited him to sit next to me. I think knowing how deep our love is. And then Gray was on the other side of Matt. This is all very important to the listeners, I know.
Totally. It's...
Why don't you describe... first of all, I'll talk about the plot. So...
Based on a video game.
There's a space station. And there's a giant rat on the space station. And the rat is giant because... The genetic editing materials that they have in space, all those molecules, got into the rat, and the rat grew to be very big, and the rat made the space station explode, and the space molecules then flew back to Earth and landed in three locations. The Everglades...
All in the United States.
Well, there's an alligator. Or crocodile, one of the two. Mm. I don't know the difference. There's a big albino gorilla in San Diego. And there's a wolf in the wilderness.
In Wyoming.
In Wyoming. So those three animals, they get engorged.
And like they get cross DNA'd too. Like the wolf suddenly has porcupine quills.
Yeah, yeah.
And the alligator has like warthog tusks.
And the wolf can also fly.
Yes, it also has like squirrel bat webby things.
So the animals themselves become really great. Huge and angry. And the best thing about huge angry animals is that they start eating people and destroying things. That's why you're here for the movie Rampage.
Yes.
Then there's The Rock. And The Rock is friends with the gorilla. They're such good friends that The Rock can just talk to the gorilla, sometimes with sign language, but sometimes just talking. Like, every once in a while, The Rock is just talking to the gorilla, and the gorilla's like, oh, yes, that I concur. I concur, yes. But then the gorilla gets big, it gets angry, and cannot control itself anymore.
Meanwhile, the genetic editing DNA comes from an evil corporation run by Malin Ackerman and Jake Lacey, who want to bring the animals to Chicago because...
Reasons.
Because reasons. So they, like, transmit some brown note that the animals can't resist, so they, you know, they come to Chicago... And so while they're
a laser vapor wave.
So while they're evacuating the city, the Rock and Naomi Harris have to like
she's a PhD in genetic editing.
Yes. Who used to work at the evil corporation, but then they fired her.
Then she found out there was evil afoot and she was gonna blow the whistle
and
then they canned her. Yeah.
So only they can save the world, and they, you know, do.
Yeah.
It's it is based on a video game, which, by the way, did you notice in the early scene?
Yes.
In the office with Jake Lacy.
Yes.
They have the video game.
That's right.
So they are just all, like,
it's the game that is also inside the game.
That
the
is
the game's inside the game.
That, let me tell you a story about the one time I directed anything.
Yes.
I directed a production of Sexual Perversity in Chicago when I was at Vanderbilt.
You sure did.
And there's a scene where the lead female character is moving out of her apartment so she can move in with the guy.
I am loving you right now, and here's why. You're not dropping the name.
I'm not, because that is not the point of this story.
That's right. Anyway. This person is the star of a TV show now.
Yes.
Okay, so keep going.
Long-time listeners know who I'm talking about. Anyway, so we had to, like, put props together of things that she would be packing up.
Yeah.
And so we had a case of records.
Yeah.
And I was jokingly going to put the About Last Night soundtrack into that case, because that movie was based on the play Sexual Perversity in Chicago.
You would have been a funny jokester if you had done that.
And everyone talked me out of it, and they were right. Because it's too winky, it's too nudge in the ribs,
it takes you out of it. It takes you out, yeah.
And I saw that stupid Rampage arcade game in Jake Lacy's office for no good reason, and was just like, movie, no.
Yeah, movie, no.
It's a minor thing, but it's just hacky.
Well, this is the director of
San Andreas, and Journey 2.
So hacky is
his,
you know,
bailiwick,
right? Okay, so here's what I like about this: they do a lot of funny, silly, inventive things with the giant animals.
Yes,
they fly through the air. They eat the helicopter. They dispatch some human beings in interesting, fun ways. Mm-hmm. They pick up a big boat of tourists and just throw it. People are flying through the air to their death in this film. And that is gloriously entertaining.
The Rock and Naomi Harris managed to get out of a crashing plane and surf debris in a helicopter with no back rotor.
Right.
There's some fun action movie stuff in here, no question, and some fun monster stuff.
Utterly ridiculous and stupid stuff.
You know, Jeffrey Dean Morgan is completely hamming it up.
Right.
Southern accenting it.
Right.
I don't watch The Walking Dead. I imagine that's the voice he's doing on that show, too.
Maybe.
But it's like, you can tell he's not taking any of this seriously for a second, and nor should you.
No. I have problems. Here are my problems. Matt and I had this conversation about the tone of vintage Japanese kaiju films. Mm-hmm. The tone of those films, not counting the first Godzilla, which is a film about something.
Right.
But every single one that came after.
And also not counting the more recent ones where the monsters are CG.
Right. Those old-fashioned kaiju films from Japan, they were physically limited by human beings in big rubber costumes.
Right.
And therefore, the fighting was like
pro wrestling,
which gave it all a great sense of fun and of safety. Follow me where I'm going here.
Okay. I know what you mean.
Nothing ever scary or bad was really happening. You know, the posters promised terror of the worst imaginable kind. What happens when all of the monsters come together at Monster Island to fight and take over the world? Well, that is destroy all monsters. That's what happens. And the twins, the Mothra twins, were they in Destroy All Monsters?
Yeah,
But then there's the space ladies with the sparkly heads, mm-hmm. you know, like, nothing really frightening is happening in those films. But because the creatures in Rampage are digital, I'm going to maybe guess that some of the gorilla scenes were done by a human being in a
mocap
performance capture situation.
But also they are mutated, but they are recognizable animals.
Correct. And so because they are not people in costumes, they can fight any way they want. And the way they fight is warlike and punishing and
go for the neck
and increasingly brutal as the film continues. And by the end, when they are really walloping each other in ways that are sort of gut-wrenching, I thought, if I had a kid who was like 6, would I want this kid here right now watching this? Like, I would take a 6-year-old to see Destroy All Monsters in a heartbeat.
Sure.
I would demand that the child go see Destroy All Monsters. But the level of brutality and gratuitous, nasty, mean-spirited violence, it began to feel like a little more than I was hoping for from something like this.
Well, I think there is room for a more brutal brand of monster movie, but maybe not in a film that has been otherwise this ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, if you're doing a darker, intense movie about, you know, manipulating DNA, blah, blah, blah,
right,
and you wind up with these horrible monsters that attack each other in a horrible way, then yeah, there's room for that. You're not saying that they all have to be kid-friendly. But in this movie that is so otherwise inane, it hasn't earned this, like, level of brutality that you wind up with.
So there's that. And then there's a thing that happens very close to the end. And it's a spoiler, and I don't care. I'm just going to say it. And the reason I'm going to say it is because, in spite of the fact that it's a spoiler, it has nothing to do with the plot.
Right.
It could have not been in the film, and everything would have been great. In fact, it would have been immeasurably better if this had not been in the film. The gorilla sexually harasses Naomi Harris.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. That is what happens. And it is not stupid. It is wrong. And there is no reason, after an entire film of Naomi Harris being a competent world-saving scientist,
right,
for her character to be subjected to this. And when the gorilla does it, The Rock goes, "Hey, man, don't do that. That's not nice." Well, sure, The Rock can say that, and his character gets away from that situation cleanly, but we have grown to really care about this gorilla and think of it affectionately because they have anthropomorphized it so much that it's basically The Rock's brother in the film. Like, The Rock even calls him his family.
But it's actually, I think, maybe worse than you're describing it. By the way, it's not that the ape never touches
her. He says he does a horrible thing. A gesture to Naomi Harris.
But not only does the gorilla do it, but then when Naomi Harris's back is turned, like, The Rock and the gorilla share this sort of winking heh heh moment.
Right.
So, like, The Rock is like, "What? No, that's terrible." But then as soon as she's not looking, he's like, "Heh heh."
So,
which is like, ugh.
And I am angry more than anything that I even have to have this conversation about this otherwise ridiculous, innocuous junk.
Yeah.
Like, I shouldn't have to be talking about this in any way approaching seriousness. And now, because of this idiotic thing that happens at the end of the film, this joke that had no reason to be there, I'm mad.
It's dumb. And not even good dumb, necessarily.
And you can say, "Oh, virtue signaling," or whatever, but you know what? F you. Because this is the same kind of stuff that they pulled in the Kevin Hart, Will Ferrell movie about prison rape.
Right.
And how ha-ha-ha-ha-ha that
is. Well, what it is, it's...
So it's not that I'm offended, it's that you, movie makers, are stupid.
Yeah.
And you should know better than this.
This is the kind of stuff that, like, Molly Ringwald was writing about in The New Yorker.
Right.
About movies that were made 30 years ago.
Right.
And they're still doing it.
If you're too dumb as a filmmaker or a creative person who makes decisions, a producer, or Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who could have said no to this.
Yeah, nobody at any point.
Because you know Naomi Harris was like, I don't have the power to make this not happen.
Yeah.
You know.
No, there were any number of people who could have spotted it and gone, this is tone deaf. Let's not do it.
But no, they didn't. They did it anyway. So yeah, there you go. That's what happens in that movie. Bleh.
Moving on.
Truth or dare?
Truth or dare? Yeah.
So the kids who are in college, Lucy Hale.
From Pretty Little Liars.
Tyler Posey.
From Teen Wolf.
Violet Bean.
From The Flash.
They and their other pals, they go to Mexico. Spring break!
Woo!
Spring break!
Spring break.
And they get there, and this cute, scruffy, bearded little dude.
Who used to be on Degrassi.
Was he on Degrassi?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was Fiona Coyne's twin brother.
Oh, okay. He's a stranger to them. And he goes, hey, you guys want to go party? And they go, yeah, we love to party. And so they go to
a second location with a stranger.
And it's an abandoned mission slash church slash evil haunted house. They get there and they play Truth or Dare. And the reason he brought him there was to tag them.
To bring them into the game.
To tag them into the game. That he cannot escape, and no one can escape, and the game is constructed around death and truth or dare. And it goes on a rotating turn situation, and if two people take truth, then the third person has to take the dare, and if you refuse the dare, you die.
Yeah. If you don't tell the truth, or you don't do the dare, or you refuse to play,
you die.
You die.
I find this premise to be a good one. I like this premise. It reminds me a lot of the Final Destination movies, where you're sort of stuck in the thing, you know, and you have to outsmart the thing. I also like the very physical mechanics of tagging someone in and how every other element of the film including this, traffics in, and I said this on Madeline Brand the other day, the language and the rituals and the aesthetics of social media, where the tagging of a person involves them in your life.
Mm.
You know, the idea of a viral video that takes over the consciousness of a group of people for a while. You know,
I just thought of the fact that the guy brings them to the mission at the beginning, and they make it out like the mission is an important location and things happened there, and that's why the blah 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 blah.
Right.
But then by the end of the movie, that's not really the thing anymore.
No. But as I was saying,
sorry.
The film is physically like the way the internet is. You know, you've got people who are participating in sort of a mimetic situation.
Sure.
You know, it's like a real life meme. You know, one of the girls in the movie even says that when a person is possessed by the Truth or Dare game and their face turns into this bizarre,
creepy
smile, it is as though they are possessed by a weird Snapchat filter.
Right. They could have called it I Can Has Murder.
Right, yes. There are themes here of privacy being invaded, of people being exposed, of people being betrayed, the damaging effects of call-out culture.
One's public life versus one's private
life.
Yeah,
there's so much, really, that's in this script and so much in this film that could have been explored in a way that was fascinating and relevant and meaningful.
I was going to say, we're making this movie sound far more interesting than it is.
Well, I'm getting to that. None of these really great ideas that just pop up like bubbles to the surface become really much of anything. I will give it a clever ending that is absolutely in keeping with what I am talking about
now.
And
also points for including a gay person amongst the potential victims.
Equal rights for gay death in horror films.
You're going to kill off a bunch of nubile college students. At least one of them needs to be LGBT.
Yeah. But it's not scary at all.
Not really.
It's not at all scary.
It's PG-13.
It doesn't even have jump scares.
It has a couple.
But they're weak.
There was at least one that got me.
There were two jump scares in... The Strangers 2 that got to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the king of arms folded, what do you got?
Right.
When it comes to the jump
scare. Yes, we know. You're so inured.
So, I wish that this had been so much better. Because, you know, Blumhouse, they have like an okay record now.
It's no Happy Death Day.
No, Happy Death Day is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
This is just not much.
We're getting that Purge prequel.
Well, you know.
That finally explains the beginning of the Purge. Did I tell you, when I went to the Spirit Awards, I was on the bus with our friend who is a, you know, works in the industry.
Yes.
And we sat behind a woman who he knew, who he had worked with a bunch, who was now like a big muckety-muck at Blumhouse.
Right.
And I told her, my husband really wants Purge Christmas.
Oh, God, so
please
much.
Please make that happen.
So much. My husband, who is a real film critic, who loves the Purge movies.
She was like, I will let people know.
Purge Christmas.
Purge Christmas.
Put it out there in the world. Talk about it. Make it a thing on the internet. Everybody talk about Purge Christmas so that it can happen.
Are you doing the secret now?
I'm manifesting my intention. Or I guess I am. I don't know. These are words I heard once. On the Goop podcast, where Oprah and Gwyneth Paltrow talk to each other about intention and vibration and energy
and manifestation.
Molecules, the physical stuff that pushes makes things.
The Oprah interview.
It makes money pour out of your butt, apparently.
The Oprah interview on the Goop podcast, it's almost performance art.
It's performance, all right.
It's bananas. Such a heaping helping of codswallop.
What I love is that neither Gwyneth Paltrow nor Oprah think of themselves as gullible or charlatans.
No.
Like, they believe this stuff.
Yeah, they are neither.
Gwyneth Paltrow believes that moonbeams vibrate and cleanse your yoni egg.
Yeah.
And
you should steam your vagina after
Oprah
a long
believes,
trip.
Oprah believes that the universe...
Takes
ready,
requests.
Takes requests. Yeah. So, like,
they don't think of themselves as either purveyors or consumers of snake oil, but they totally are.
Anyway, I have chosen, or I should really say, the universe has chosen me to be the facilitator,
the vessel,
the vessel. Thank you.
Of Purge Christmas.
To gift the world, Purge Christmas. I'm stating my intention, and I'm going to manifest it by just saying it again and again. And I'm tagging all of you. We'll rise up like a viral army and just say Purge Christmas.
Hashtag
Purge Christmas. We're going to hashtag it, and it's going to be... It's going to be a Purge Christmas movie. I don't even need, like, a story credit. Except I have a lot of great ideas for it. But it would be nice. Finally, a Christmas movie for me. One that I can love.
You have White Christmas.
That's different.
You have Dave White Christmas.
That's different. That's different. All right. So, don't go see Truth or Dare.
Nah.
That's a TV. That's for the TV.
Yeah.
That's for whenever it starts streaming somewhere.
It's a slumber party.
Pirate movie. It, I guess, and then, like, Yeah.
We do not encourage piracy.
Really?
We don't.
Okay, we don't. You're right, we don't.
It's eventually going to pop up on something that you already pay for, like Netflix or Hulu or something.
Something. The writer.
Yes.
Why don't you tell the plot of this since I told the plot of the first two?
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
So, Brady Jandro is, in real life, a rodeo rider who had to stop being a rodeo rider because he had a terrible head injury. And in this film, he plays a character named Brady, who is a rodeo rider who has to stop being a rodeo rider because he had a terrible head injury. He has a sister who's played by Brady's real life sister, and a father played by Brady's real life father. And it's basically a film about somebody who has spent his life with a goal in mind, that is no longer attainable for him, and having to figure out what next and what else and what instead. He's a good rider. He's very talented at taming and breaking horses. But he can't do that anymore because it is going to kill him because he has like this row of surgical staples in his head. And so it's basically a movie about somebody kind of coming to terms with where their life has brought them and where it's going to go after this detour. It's directed by a Chinese-born filmmaker named Chloe Zhao, who has lived in the United States for a long time and has spent several years living on a Lakota reservation where she previously made a film called Songs My Brothers Taught Me.
Right.
And when she met Brady and heard his story, she tapped him to be the subject of her next film. And this movie premiered at Cannes last year, where it was heralded as people really loved it. And then it was nominated for like 4 Spirit Awards this year.
Yes.
It was shot by Joshua James Richards, I believe is his name, who is the cinematographer on God's Own Country, which is a movie I love. And like The Writer, those are both films about kind of people sort of defined by their relationship to the land around them.
Right.
I'm a little less in love with The Writer than seemingly most people, so why don't you talk about why it's so great?
There is such a gorgeous use of physical landscape here.
Mm-hmm.
To make you understand the attraction to staying in this place where you're also trapped.
Hmm.
Which is a weird way to live. You know, you want to stay because you love the land so much. And look how beautiful it is. It's all around you.
Right.
Meanwhile, you're also kind of stuck here. Because there's nothing else for you. So the one thing that forms the identity of the people in this film is rodeo. And rodeo is as dangerous as American football.
Yeah.
In terms of concussion and the consequences of it and, you know. It's
bodily harm and death.
So I felt, I know you were not a fan of, or rather you were hoping for a more explicit discussion of the political and economic, you know, ramifications of life on a reservation and the why of it and the historical
the context
oppression
in which
indigenous
they live,
of indigenous people in the United States. But I feel like the movie gives you this. It shows you it. It doesn't tell you, it shows you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the performances are great from all these like first time
mm-hmm.
or second time people. It's a tough movie. It's not, you know, it's no one's idea of a good time.
Yeah.
But it is graceful and tender. It is a generous, empathetic film.
Yeah.
Specifically about this one guy and the vice that he's in.
Mm.
You know, he knows how to do this one thing really well. This one thing that he knows how to do really well could kill him.
Right.
Now, people around him are telling him, from all sides what to do. The doctor's saying, don't do this. And his buddies, his guy buddies, are saying, oh, come on, you're a cowboy. You have to do it.
Yeah. Just get
if
back
you
up
die, you die.
Get back in the saddle.
Easy and, for them to say.
Yeah. And yeah. Even and his dad, who is like not the stablest person on earth, knows enough to be like, no, you're going to die if you
right.
keep doing this.
Right. So it's about, it is this paradoxical situation. It's about identity that can harm you. In a land that is a place you love that restricts you. It's gorgeous. I really, really, really like this. And I it reminded me of Certain Women. That's the name of it? The Kelly Reichardt film? Certain Women? Yeah, it reminded me of that.
Yeah,
and
I could see that.
Not just because of its location, but in its tone and its sort of humanity.
Yeah.
It's really terrific.
There's a lot I like about this film. There are a few things that still just don't quite sit well with me that I'm still sort of chewing on. But it's worth seeing, certainly. And it's worth seeing in a theater because it is so beautifully filmed. And it is... The way that the film captures nature expresses so much about who the characters are and how they live. I definitely, even if I'm not at the front of the bandwagon, I do recommend the film.
Yeah.
But I probably, of the two movies that are out right now, I'm probably more excited about Leon Pete.
The two movies that involve horses.
Yes.
Mean. Okay.
No, the only two movies that are in theaters
right
now.
Well, you didn't specify.
Well, I thought that was.
Yeah.
It was understood.
No.
Much like you say, the you know
not
the political
me.
Context in this film is understood. Anyway.
Okay, we are in a hurry, so there are no DVD recommendations this week.
Okay.
We got to move through a couple of letters.
Okay.
And then we are done. We got to get out of here and go
okay.
award a scholarship.
Fine.
This is from Melanie. I've been sitting on this letter because I keep forgetting to read it.
You had one job.
When I was in my final year of university, it's kind of a long letter, so everybody just snuggle in and relax. When I was in my final year of university, I took a course called Religion in Popular Film as I was minoring in religious studies. Grandpa needs his glasses. This course involved discussing religious themes, the presentation of religion in films, etc. As the professor always had one film that was a horror film for that class, the film that he chose that semester was The Exorcist. The question we were supposed to consider for that film was, is it possible for a filmmaker to go too far? Is it possible for an artist to go out of bounds of what is acceptable, appropriate, etc.? Do filmmakers have a responsibility in how they present their work and the goals they are trying to achieve with their art? I would like to pose this question to you guys. Is it possible for a filmmaker to go too far? I'm curious about your thoughts and opinions on this subject as two film critics who obviously have a deep love of film and are also, I would consider, as the youths say, woke.
You.
I'm curious about what you think, as we are currently living in a time where there are calls for networks, streaming services, film studios, etc., to drop, change, or ban certain films, shows, creators, actors, storylines, due to how they represent certain subjects, ideas, or people who are potentially problematic, lack understanding of ideas they're trying to discuss, or attack those in marginalized groups in the quest to be a contrarian, just to name a few. On the other side, we're also living in a time where people take any dissenting opinion against a piece of art as censorship, even when you are not saying that people shouldn't be able to say what they want, but are merely trying to express your feelings about the subject. I've had this one happen to me so many times, especially when I try to discuss my issues with Dave Chappelle's transphobic jokes. I'm personally of the belief that there should be no limitations, but artists should still be aware of what they're making and what that piece represents. You should be able to make any movie, song, or whatever you want, but you still have to take responsibility for the decisions you make in your quest to create and be aware of how you could potentially be problematic in the ways that you've created it. Roland Emmerich's Stonewall, Get Hard, the infamous Dear Fat People video by Nicole Arbour. You also have to be aware that art is meant to make you feel something, and sometimes the emotion invoked by the piece are not the ones that the artist or the audience was expecting or desired, be it good or bad. What do you guys think?
I mean, you know, yeah, I always sort of lean toward, we all have freedom of speech, we all have freedom of expression, but with that is also responsibility and the freedom of expression of the people who want to tell you that you're bollocks. You know, right. It's like the number of, you know, Fox News types who get all bent out of shape when somebody complains about a thing they said. It's like, no, the same document that gives you the freedom to have said the thing in the first place gives this other person the freedom to say you're full of it. So yeah, I don't know what too far even means, really.
Well, the reason you don't know what it means is because everyone has a different line drawn in the sand.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to stop anybody from making a thing, but I think that the person making it and the person who paid for it have to face whatever consequences might occur based on the thing that they made or paid for to be made.
The misogyny in Rampage has a right to be there. They can do whatever they want. They can make any kind of movie they want. And they did.
And we have a right to tell people that it's there.
And I'm going
to
tell somebody it's there and that it's stupid. And that...
that person has a right to not buy a ticket if that's a deal breaker for
right.
them. You know, Solo should exist. Do I ever want to watch it again? No.
Get Hard could be as stupidly homophobic as it wants to be.
Yeah.
And it is.
But then, you know...
But then when Louis Vertel comes to you in a Junket interview...
and tells you it is.
And tells Will Ferrell and
Kevin Hart.
And Kevin Hart to their faces that this film is a mistake, it's beautiful to watch their reactions.
Yeah.
Because their reactions are...
Funny is funny.
Funny is funny. People should just take a joke. Well, you just, you know...
Yeah.
You just got told actual truth.
Right.
From an actual queer person. Who does not want your film banned, no. Just wants you to know that you just made a idiotic movie.
That you just pooped the bed.
Yeah.
And so now you have to lie in it.
Yeah. So, he'll forever be my hero for that.
Oh,
I know. Yeah.
He just talked about it on Keep It, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think it came up when they were talking about the whole Simpsons Apu thing.
Right. So, what's the line? I don't know what the line is. You know, some people think The Exorcist 40 years later is over the line.
Yeah.
It's not pretty to watch the stuff in The Exorcist that you know, made people so upset. I can't imagine being the parent of a child actor.
Right.
Who would say, oh yeah, they can do that in that movie. My kid, she's 11, but she can do that in this film.
Nope.
And that's fine. You know, I can't imagine myself in that mindset as a parent.
Nobody involved in the making of Breakfast at Tiffany's thought that Mickey Rooney and his hilarious Japanese impersonation was over the line.
Yeah.
I'm sure actual Japanese people at the time that movie came out were horrified by it.
Right.
And as time passes by, you know, general audiences look at that and are aghast by it.
Right.
You know, but Breakfast at Tiffany's exists.
Yeah. I guess we didn't answer your question. I don't know if we did or not.
Yeah. I think that people just have to... People can make what they want to make, but they have to be ready for the consequences if they do it wrong.
Right. Yeah. Okay, one more thing. This is from Kelvin. I was listening to you review the new Ben Russell film on your podcast. Now, Ben Russell is the director of the ethnographic documentary Good Luck.
Oh.
Part ethnographic documentary, part sort of experimental documentary. I saw it a couple weeks ago. It's terrific. If you get the chance, if it comes to a film festival or a museum near you... go look at it. It's about the lives of miners in Serbia and Suriname.
M-I-N-E-R-S.
Yeah. He continues, The cinema version of it doesn't open for another month in the UK, where he lives. But the original multi-screen gallery installation version was great. Now, see, I didn't know that it was a gallery installation first.
And did both halves play side by side?
Good question. I don't know. On the off chance that you're not already aware of any of the following related films, I think you would enjoy them. Steve McQueen's Western Deep. This was an early gallery work before McQueen started making feature films. And that's, I mean, you knew that, right? You knew that.
I knew he had an art background.
He comes from that world, and his early work was in galleries and museum spaces, yeah. It's a really great short ethnographic film about the deepest working mine in the world. The start of the new Ben Russell film is basically an extended reference to the Steve McQueen work. Any of the other early Steve McQueen films for art galleries have that ethnographic bent, and they are really worth checking out. Carib's Leap and Ashes are both brilliant, although he has also made a lot of very Isaac Julian-inspired works when he first started that I think are less successful. Other Ben Russell films are worth checking out. I really like The Twilight State and also Let Us Persevere in What We Have Resolved Before We Forget. That's the name of it.
Catchy title.
If you don't know him already, I highly recommend looking up the British artist filmmaker Ben Rivers. He makes very similar work to Ben Russell. His short ethnographic works like This Is My Land and Ah, Liberty and Origin of the Species are all brilliant, as are his feature films, 2 Years at Sea and The Sky Trembles and The Earth is Afraid and The Two Eyes Are Not Brothers. That's a good title. Then they made a film collaboratively called A Spell to Ward Off Darkness, which includes, and this makes it somewhat attractive to me, a 30-minute long sequence from a black metal gig. So, yeah. Thank you, Kelvin. You taught me things that I'm going to go look up more, because I sure do love good luck.
I do want to mention real quick before we run out of here, two major losses in the film world in the last couple of weeks.
Yes.
We just, Milos Forman passed away this weekend.
Yes.
Director of Amadeus and One Floor of the Cuckoo's Nest and The Fireman's Ball and People vs. Larry Flint. And Valmont, which I've never seen. The right. Other Dangerous Liaisons movie.
Right.
And then, I forgot to mention last week, Isao Takahata, who was... Hayao Miyazaki's partner at Studio Ghibli. His features include the heartbreaking Grave of the Fireflies, Only Yesterday, The Tale of Princess Kaguya, and maybe my favorite anime of all time, Pompoko.
Yeah.
So both guys were giants in the field. I recommend you seek out their work if you don't know it. But just wanted to acknowledge their passing, and we're
falling apart.
Yes, stop it. We're in a hurry, so I can't acknowledge all the podcasts that I usually tell you to go check out. But
you know what they are.
Go listen to another episode. You'll know. Hey, join our club. Go to patreon.com/linoleumknife.
That would be nice.
And find out about all the cool stuff that we offer. Extra content, prizes, other fabulous experiences.
Ooh, speaking of that.
Yes.
If you've been waiting for a long time for a mug and they've been on back order, they're here.
Woo.
So I'm shipping them out now.
Nice.
Very exciting.
All right.
Yeah.
Get ready to get mugged. Yeah.
We're done.
Okay. Follow us at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Leave us a 5-star review at Apple Podcasts and subscribe there for free. Leave us positive feedback in all the places where we stream. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you, Blue, for our theme music. Will you calm down?
I can't calm down.
We're going to be done.
I cannot calm down.
All right, fine. So until next time.
Goodbye.